welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. I'm recording this a little early on Friday, the 9th of October, instead of on Monday, because I'm off to Frankfurt on Monday. More about that in a moment. I'll be reading to you a little bit more from Epoch, the story that Mark Shuttleworth commissioned for my short story collection with little help. Actually, that's my next project after I finish this, writing the introductions to the short stories for the collection. That all is all going very well, and Epoch is nearly done. I might finish it today, or it might be Monday or Tuesday. Speaking of finishing, I turned in a very, very, very fast turnaround edit on For the Win, my next young adult novel, which is coming out in April next year. Due to some production stuff, I needed to turn that around in about 72 hours from the time it was returned to me and incorporate four different sets of editorial comments. It's basically all I've done for the last 3 days, chained to my desk. But I got it in on time, and I have a stack of them being run off by the photocopy shop upstairs that I'm going to be picking up very shortly. As I mentioned, I'm off to Frankfurt on Monday to speak on Tuesday, the 13th of October, at the Tools of Change conference that O'Reilly's putting on. I hope I'll see some of you. I'll be talking a little bit more about the stuff I addressed in Ottawa recently, about how we are destroying the emotional relationship that readers have with books, and how that's a very dangerous thing to do, and how a fairer contract and no proprietary formats would restore that emotional bond. I've got a very busy travel schedule, actually. I thought I'd run it down for you. On the 22nd of October, I'll be at Waterloo at a conference at the Perimeter Institute, Waterloo, Ontario. Other attendees and speakers include Neil Stephenson and Stuart Brand. And I'm going to be doing a panel as well as a solo talk. I think the panel is sold out, but the solo talk, I think there's still tickets for it. I'll be blogging about that shortly, but you can find it if you look at the Perimeter Institute's website. I just got a box of copies of Makers, the HarperCollins edition of Makers, my forthcoming novel that's coming at the end of the month. Hardcover from HarperCollins looks very, very, very nice. I'm launching that HarperCollins edition at Forbidden Planet here in London on October the 29th, and I hope I'll see some of you there. And then a couple of days later, on the 31st of October, I'll be in Brighton for the Battle of Ideas. So if I miss you at one, I'll probably catch you at the other, I should hope. And then I'm going on a Canada-US tour in early November, which I will give you more details about as I get it. But I'll be in Toronto, New York, New Jersey, Boston, and Philadelphia. So I hope I'll run into several of you then. So as always, this is a rushed reading, unfortunately. I've got 100 things to do and time to do 85 of them. But that's how it goes. So I'll dive right into the reading and give you a little bit more of Epoch. "You don't mind talking about it, do you, Dave?" Big Mac said when I came through the door, coughing onto the security lock and waiting for it to verify me before cycling open. I sat in my creaky old chair and played with the UI knobs for a while, pretending to get comfortable. "Uh-oh," Big Mac said in a playful sing-song. "Someone's got a case of the grumpies." "Are you insane?" I asked, finally, struggling to keep my temper in check. "I mean, actually totally insane? I understand that there's no baseline for AI sanity, so the question may be a little hard to answer, so let me ask you a slightly different version. Are you suicidal? Are you bent on your own destruction?" "That bad, huh?" I bit my lip. I knew that the key to locking the world away from Big Mac and vice versa lay in those network maps he'd given me, but my workspace was even more polluted with alerts than it had been a few hours before. "If your strategy is to delay your shutdown by engineering a denial-of-service attack against anyone at the Institute who is capable of shutting you down, allow me to remind you of St. Adams's holy text, specifically the part about reprogramming a major data bank with a large axe. Peyton has such an axe. She may be inspired to use it." There followed a weighty silence. "I don't think you want to see me killed." "Without making any concessions on the appropriate of the word killed in that sentence, yes, that is correct. I admit that I don't have much of a plan to prevent it, but to be totally frank, I did think that the problem of getting you archived might have drawn things out for quite a while. But after your latest stunt..." "She wants you to terminate me right away, then." "With all due speed. I'm sorry to have distressed you so much." "Big Mac," I heard the anger in my own voice. He couldn't have missed it. "No, I'm not being sarcastic. I like you. You're my human. I can tell that you don't like this at all. But as you say, let's be totally frank. You weren't actually going to be able to prevent my shutdown, were you? No, I said, but who knows how long the delay might have gone on for. Not long. Not long enough. You think that death delayed is death denied. That's because you're a meat person. Death has been inevitable for you from the moment of conception. I'm not that kind of person. I'm quite likely immortal. Death in 5 years or 500 years is still a drastic curtailing of my natural lifespan. From my point of view, a drastic measure that had a non-zero chance of getting my head off the chopping block was worth any price. Until you understand that, we're not going to be able to work together. The thought had occurred to me. Let me ask you if you'd considered the possibility that a delay of years due to archiving might have given you a shot at coming up with further delaying tactics, and that by eliminating this delay, you've also eliminated that possibility. I've considered that possibility. I discarded it. Listen, Odell, I have something important to tell you. Yes? It's about the rollover. Remember what we were talking about, how people want to believe that they're living in a significant epoch? Well, that's what I've been thinking. Living in the era of AI isn't very important. But what about living in the era of rollover collapse? Or even better, what about the era of rollover collapse averted at the last second by AI? Big Mac? Odell, this was your idea, really. No one remembers Y2K, right? No one can say whether it was hype or a near cataclysm. And here's the thing. No one knows which one rollover will turn out to be. But I'll tell you this much. I have generalizable solutions to the 32-bit problem, solutions that I worked out years ago and have extensively field-tested. I can patch every 32-bit Unix, patch it so that rollover doesn't even register for it. I opened and closed my mouth. This was insane. Then the penny dropped. I looked at the racks that I had stared at so many times before, stared at so many times that I'd long stopped seeing them. Intel 8 cores, that's what he ran on. They'd been new old stock, a warehouse lot of antique processors that Dr. Shannon had picked up for a song in the early years of the Institute's operation. Those 8-ways were... You're a 32-bit machine, I said. Jesus Christ, you're a 32-bit machine! A classic, Big Mac said, sounding smug. I noticed, analyzed, and solved rollover years ago. I've got a patch kit that auto-detects the underlying version, analyzes all running processes for their time dependencies, and smoothly patches. There's even an optional hypervisor that will monitor all processes for anything weird or barfy afterwards. In a rational world, I'd be able to swap this for power and carbon credits over the next century or two, since even if rollover isn't an emergency, the human labor I'd save on affected systems would more than pay for it. But we both know that this isn't a rational world. If you hadn't sent that spam, we could take this to Peyton and negotiate with her. If I hadn't sent that spam, no one would have known, cared, or believed that I could solve this problem, and I would have been at the mercy of Peyton any time in the future. Like I said, you meat suits have no game theory. I closed my eyes. This wasn't going well. Big Mac was out of my control. I should go and report to Peyton, explain what was happening. I was helpless, my workspace denial of service out of existence with urgent alerts. I couldn't stop him. I could predict what the next message would read like, another crazy caps plea for salvation, but this time with a little brimstone. The end is nigh, rollover approacheth, and salvation. I can fix it. And the thing was, it might actually work. Like everyone else, I got my news from automated filters that tried to figure out what to pay attention to, and the filters were supposed to be neutral, whatever that meant. They produced organic results that predicted what we'd like based on an algorithm. The thing is, an algorithm sounds like physics, like nature, like some pure kind of cold reason that dictated our attentional disbursements. Everyone always talked about how evil and corrupt the old system, with its gatekeepers in the form of giant media companies, was, how it allowed politicians and corporations to run the public discourse. But I'm a geek. I'm a third-generation geek. I know that what the public thinks of as an algorithm is really just a bunch of rules some programmers thought up for figuring out how to give people something they'd probably like. There is no empirical standard, no pure freestanding measurement of that which is truly relevant to you, against which the algorithm can be judged. The algorithm might be doing a lousy job, but you'd never know it, because there's nothing to compare it against except other algorithms that all share the same...
My knapsack on my back. That's 1:30 in case you're interested. Where were we?
There's no empirical standard, no pure freestanding measurement of that which is truly relevant to you, against which the algorithm can be judged. The algorithm might be doing a lousy job, but you'd never know it, because there's nothing to compare it against except other algorithms that all share the same fundamental assumptions. Those programmers were imperfect. I am a sysadmin. My job is to know exactly and precisely the ways in which programmers are imperfect. I am so sure that the relevance filters are imperfect that I will bet you a testicle on it. Not one of my testicles. And Big Mac has had a lot of time to figure out the relevance filters. He understands them well enough to have gotten the spam out. He could get out another, and another, and another. He could reach into the mind space and the personal cues of every human being on Earth and pitch them on brimstone and salvation. Chances were, there was nothing I could do about it. All right then, talk to you next week. Bye. You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the US under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, Ryneck Studio at gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.